Merkle Media.
What does the goddamn line say, Tony?
Please do not use gendered language.
Then what? I'll be arrested, put in airport jail.
Look, you're going completely sideways, man.
It's a big club, and you ain't in it.
How dare you?
Mr. Speaker, the President of the United States.
I'm Chris Hansen with Dave on NBC.
Jack Mary's Tack Theratrix.
Hi, I'm Spartacus.
Steve Jackson, Sacramento, he, him.
Steven Seagal.
Sex offender guy.
I'm Keith Morris.
This is Muammar Gaddafi.
I'm Rick James, bitch.
Sorting through the lies.
The hijacker's passport was found blocks from the World Trade Center crash site, if you can believe that.
We cannot track $2.3 trillion in transactions.
And uncovering the centuries-long plan for world domination.
Learning about Cuba, having some food.
Let's talk about Chinese people.
Have you ever been in a Turkish prison?
I have a Perdita!
Swangles and Fort Lauderdale.
I have sent six of my Libyan missiles to blow up the Sears hardware department.
Nothing could be more fun than jumping off a cliff with two German bisexuals.
Oh, you English are so superior, aren't you?
Thank you, comrade.
And now, macroaggressions.
That's what assholes call it.
With your host.
Buddy, I don't know who you are, but you're about to get chlamydia.
Charlie Robinson.
Hey, Whitey, where's your hat?
You want to drop the blame on Charlie and say it's all Charlie's fault.
He was a retard.
I get some goddamn diuretic.
Welcome to Macroaggressions. I'm your host, Charlie Robinson. If you're watching us on Rockfin, Odyssey, and.video, vigilante.tv, or you're listening wherever podcasts are served, thanks a million. We appreciate it. We couldn't do the show without you. If you want to connect with me, the website is theoctopusofglobalcontrol.com. You can find me on Twitter at macroaggression, where I argue with robots. Thank you to, by the way, if you guys are interested in getting out of the cold, first week of February, going to Mexico and going to Anarcapulco, please do. Anarcapulco 2023 will be happening February 6th through the 10th in Acapulco, Mexico. You can come out and see me. Obviously, Berwick will be there. Max Egan, Larkin Rose, David Icke, Dr. Ron Paul, Dan Dix, Del Bigtree, Mark Passio, Dr. Andrew Kaufman, Dr. Carrie Madej, a lot of people there, crypto stages, health and wellness stages, anarchy stages, fuck the police stages. I don't know. Maybe. Kids camps. If you have kids that want to come, there's going to be plenty of opportunities there. So I'm going to put a link in the description, anarcapulco.com. You can use the promo code macro. That'll save you some money. Thank you to our newest sponsor, Legal Shield. My goodness, I'm really kicking myself for not having them around earlier. They are a company that uses the power of the group to secure legal consultation at a reasonable price. And probably the easiest way to describe it. This is available in the United States and Canada. This is a company that's been in business for 50 years. They have an A+ rating with the Better Business Bureau. Look, I asked the question, when was the last time you updated your will? If it's been a while, or if you don't have one, you should really start thinking about this. It's not something anyone really likes to, they don't like to think about it. Certainly don't want to spend money on it, but do you have a financial power of attorney? Do you have a medical power of attorney? Well, I never really thought we needed the medical power of attorney until what we went through over the last couple of years. And now you find yourself hooked up to a ventilator. You better make sure that somebody has the power to get you off of that. So I ask you this, just get your legal ducks in a row. And if you are so inclined, you can go through our sponsor, Legal Shield. We even created our own website, don'tgetpushedaround.com, where you can sign up for their service. It's $1 a day. It's $30 a month. That's all it is. And you can add on additional features like ID Shield. There's also one that has to do with the gun concealed carry ownership too. So take a look. I tell you what, this is the deal. Just go to the website, take a look, see what you think. See if it's right for you. If it is, pull the trigger. If not, that's cool. The website, www.don'tgetpushedaround.com. The link for that will be in the description below. Also, Solar Power Lifestyle. Thanks, guys, over there. Small business, small family-owned veteran-owned business in New York. We appreciate them. They listen to the show. They love the show. So if you are in the market for anything solar power related, whether that's an entire system for your home or just something portable you can throw in the trunk of your car, go over and take a look at solarpowerlifestyle.com. They have everything. They have all the major brands. They have free shipping on all products. They have financing available. If you want to buy a system that's a little bigger than what you want to spend right now, you can finance it. And if you use the promo code MACRO, you'll save yourself a discount. Save yourself a little bit of money on the way out too. So solarpowerlifestyle.com, promo code MACRO. That's going to be in the show notes as well. Well, I'm really excited about this one. We've been trying to make this happen for a while. One of my favorite people. He is the producer and presenter of the wildly popular The Richie Allen Show. Maybe one of the best radio shows, international radio shows out there. And I'm not kissing your arse. I don't do that. Of course, I am talking about the great Richie Allen. Hello, Richie.
How are you doing, Charlie?
It's good to see you.
I tell you what, Charlie, I heard you talking about Acapulco there. That's lousy. I'm in the northwest of the UK. It's -1 degrees here. We're freezing our backsides off here in Salford. But no, it's great to be with you, pal. And thanks very much for inviting me. I really appreciate it.
Well, one of these days, well, thanks for coming. And one of these days, I'd love to see you at an Acapulco. We've got there's a pretty good group going out there. Excited to, you know, I've been a couple times to speak, but I only speak so that I can get a free ticket and hear everybody else.
You know, everybody else.
I got a chance to sit front row for 4 hours for David Icke a couple years ago, able to go, see Ron Paul. It's funny, you get a couple thousand anarchists together, and then you march out onto the stage an 80-year-old former Republican senator from America, and you would think that he would rightly be booed off the stage, you know, but it's Ron Paul, and they love him, man. Yeah. They just go crazy for him, so... one of these days, Richie, one of these days, we'll get you out.
One of these days. Well, it sounds lovely right now, Charlie. It sounds like the ticket right now, sitting here in ice and frost. But it's funny you mentioned David. I'm following, I suppose a lot of people are following the story that basically the Schengen European Union zone have basically banned him from traveling there. I'll tell you what's nice about that. I've come across on social media people who would have been very critical and very scornful even of David Icke in the past because of his opinions. But they can see the writing on the wall. And David's opinions don't matter. They're irrelevant. A human being has been told that he can't travel within the EU zone because somebody doesn't like what he has to say. I can't think of any time that a man who's never broken a law anywhere, who's not a criminal, has been told you don't have the right of travel, you know, right of passage through this area. So that is absolutely mental, as we say in these parts. And he's taking it to he's challenging it legally, which I'm delighted about, to be honest. It's got to be done that.
When we were in an Acapulco in 2019, we chit-chatted a little bit during at the event. And then we were both on the same plane getting out of there. So I talked to him a little bit at the airport, and he was on his way to LA. I was on my way a different direction, but he was going to LA that time because he was headed out after a stop in Los Angeles. He was going to Australia to speak. Right. And when he got to LA, they pulled his visa. So this is not the first time that they've done this. They've targeted him. And you know, listen, this is not a winning strategy for these people, because you do this, and this is the Streisand effect. You just draw attention.
Of course you do.
Like you said, David talks about very controversial things. But you know, I'll tell you, I had a little experiment that we did at the 2019 in Acapulco. I had a reporter friend with me from New York City who knew about David and had heard about David, had heard good things and had heard a lot of bad things. And this particular guy was also Jewish. And so he said, you know, I've heard the anti-Semite thing, but I want to hear the conference. I want to hear him speak. And I just want to hear for myself and see what I think, you know? So he sat through it. It was 4 hours. I caught him afterwards. I said, hey, what'd you think? What'd you think? He goes, it was fantastic. Yeah. Might have been one of the best presentations I've ever seen. And I go, what about the, did he sound crazy? He goes, no. He said, did he sound like an anti-Semite? He goes, no, not at all. He's never mentioned it once.
No, but these slurs work, Charlie. You know, I've had an incredible amount of this. You know, I've interviewed Holocaust deniers on the Richie Allen Show. I've interviewed people who have theories about Zionism. And at each turn, I've done my job, you know, and my job is to be the devil's advocate, to challenge it, to disagree with it and poke at it while allowing the person to answer. But I've had that as well, these slurs, you know. In the national press here, the Richie Allen Show is anti-Semitic, and there's very little you can do about it. You know, taking it on in court is something I probably would have done in days gone by. But the legal, the means to sue somebody for libel has become very difficult to do that here in the UK compared to the way it was, say, 15, 20 years ago. These days, you've got to put up a lot of money, Charlie. You've got to put up a lot of money before you even get to court, just in case you lose. And they say this is to prevent frivolous claims of libel and defamation. But it means that a guy like me, I don't have £300,000, Charlie.
Right.
I just don't. Now, I've been libeled in the British press and on British radio. I mean, stone cold libel. You know, guys from charities going on radio saying Richie Allen is a fermenter of hate and anti-Semitism. And none of this is true.
Of course not.
And I'm an Irish guy. I like a fight, Charlie, you know, so I'd like to see some of these guys in court. But these days they say, okay, if you want to sue for libel, you've got to put up your potential losses. It's game over then, Charlie.
Yeah.
You know, most of us don't have that kind of money to go after these people. And then there are those who might say, well, it's a waste of energy anyway. Let them say what it is they say, and you just take the moral high ground and carry on doing what it is that you're doing. But it does get frustrating.
It's easier said than done, too. When they send groups like the Center for Countering Digital Hate, which is a group that was, as far as I'm concerned, purely established just to go after you guys in the UK, after Dave. Yeah, it might as well have been called the David Icke Attack Squad, because immediately as soon as they were founded, they were funded properly with a ton of money that came from God knows where.
A lot of money from Israel, let's be honest about it. A lot of money from Israel. No two ways about that. Yeah. That's a fact.
Yeah.
Even the groups like the Campaign Against Anti-Semitism, funded by pro-Zionist groups, not just in Israel. And it's to go after anybody, generally to go after anybody who raises any criticisms of the state of Israel and how its terrorists, the IDF, operates in Gaza and what it does to the indigenous people of Palestine. But you're right, yeah. I mean, I remember they did a big massive dossier, Hope Not Hate, and it was like this and like that, and Alan this and Alan that. And yeah, but I used to get very wound up by this stuff. Not because I'm thin-skinned, but wound up, Charlie, because I'm not a fighter. I'm a peaceful man, but I stand my ground. Like, wound up because you can't meet them on the street or you can't meet them in a cafe and front them up. I say, what are you saying about me? Who the hell are you? You know, these are people you can't get anywhere near. And that really sometimes riles me, but I'm learning to calm down as I get older.
Well, yeah, it's easier said than done. When these people say things that aren't true about you, they say it in a way that sounds true, and they make it sound true, and they've got the backing of the media. And a lot of people, you know, we in the alternative media, we make this assumption that everybody knows that the mainstream media is full of shit, but not everybody does. There's still, I mean, I think people are waking up to it. A lot of people say, well, you know, I saw it on TV, so it must be true. And then the flip of that is, well, if what you're saying is real, then I would have seen it on TV and I didn't. So it's as much what they don't put on the mainstream as what they do. And what they have been putting on the mainstream lately in your neck of the woods is crazy to me. And this is the 15-minute drive limits in Oxford. Have you gotten your pass to drive through Oxford yet? I hear they're going to give you 100 of them a year. Is that right?
Charlie, this is I've been a journalist for 25 years now, I think. By the way, this is my golden retriever pup.
Beautiful.
The shot.
Beautiful. Just pop in, I might have a black cat or two that jumps into frame during the course of this as well. So hopefully
she's fascinated by this. She can see you. She's one of those dogs that does watch TV and does pay attention to what's going on when we're watching it. But
beautiful.
Look, I'm a journalist and I speak to people who write books like yourself and do research, and I bring them on and I challenge what they have to say. I poke at it, see if it's got any credibility, and we have a nice conversation, and then we, thanks, Charlie, I'll speak to you in another month or whatever.
Right.
March 2020, though, I had an epiphany. I don't generally have epiphanies, but I am. This is not a boast now, because I don't boast. I'm the guy who came up with climate lockdowns. I blame myself, by the way. I suggested it as a possibility. And it got a bit of traction at the time, and people were saying, yeah, Richie, yeah, you might be right. And I jokingly say to friends now, maybe they were listening and thought, you know what, that's a great idea. But yeah, back in March 2020, yeah, I thought this lockdown thing, it might catch on. And maybe this naturally transfers over to, let's keep our carbon footprint low and let's ration things like driving. And I came up with a scenario back in March of 2020. My scenario was, so you and me, Charlie, we live on the same street. Mm-hmm. I live in a house that's got an even door number on it. So my door number is number 28. Mm-hmm. Now you're across the street, Charlie, and you're number 27. And I imposed this kind of theory. I said, well, I wouldn't be surprised if Charlie gets to take the car out on Sundays twice a month, and you get to take it out on Sundays for your Sunday drive on the other 2 months. I said, climate lockdowns. Yeah. And it got quite a few laughs at the time. And now here we are.
Yeah. Well, in the 70s in America, yeah, when they had the big oil, the energy crisis, and they were rationing gasoline, they did something similar. Odd numbered with your license plate. If it ended in an odd number, you could go Monday, Wednesday, and Friday to the gas station. And if it ended in an even number, you could go Tuesday, Thursday, and Saturday, you know, whatever. It was something like that.
Maybe that was subconscious plagiarism on my part, maybe. Maybe I heard that somewhere.
But this is actually kind of the problem is when we cover these maniacs, as long as we do, we start learning how they think. So we wind up coming up with ideas for them. Yeah. And sometimes I had this conversation with James Corbett, actually around the same time you were having that. And he said to me, he goes, I have an idea. I have a theory of what they might do in the future. This was, I think I was talking to him middle of March 2020. So right when the lockdown started, right? And he said, I remember him saying, he goes, I almost don't want to say it because I don't want to put it out there because I know they're listening to like the shows and everything. He goes, but I'm sure these maniacs have role played this. But he was talking about like, what if they lock everybody down for a couple of weeks and it's not that bad? You know, it's just, it's Netflix and ice cream and it's, you get to see your kids and you did all this stuff. And then they open it up and they say, yep, go back. And then a couple of months or maybe a year later, they say, oh, it's lockdown time again. And everyone goes, oh, great. It's Netflix and ice cream. Yeah, and they come willingly in. He goes, and this time they never let you out. And I went, oh, God.
Listen, absolutely right. But why not, Charlie? And what you hope is that, I mean, it's funny because back in March 2020, it definitely bothered somebody because Sky News ran a piece on conspiracy theories and never asked me for, never offered me right of reply. And they ran this story about this guy, Richie Allen, with a big live radio following, saying that climate change lockdowns are coming. And how the gist of the Sky article was how absolutely farcical. So I contacted them and I said, Jesus, why didn't you offer me right of reply? Like, so they said, we did, but we couldn't find you. Nonsense. Anyway, last week when this Oxford stuff started, I contacted Sky News again and I said, do you want to rewrite that piece that you did for your website about the crazy guys with the conspiracy theories about climate lockdowns? Because Oxford local authority is basically, and Sky reported on it. So I said, you've reported on it. You're now saying it's happening and you were ridiculing guys. But look, the ridicule is great, Charlie. I tell you what, Charlie. When Sky News or The Guardian, when they give a mention to the Richie Allen, it's fantastic, Charlie. I mean, you try and do stuff so that you will get a mention. Because as you said earlier on, it's all good publicity, you know. But I got nothing back from them, not even a, you know, go and take a running jump or whatever, just nothing. But you're right. I mean, there they are now talking about it. You won't be able to drive into this zone or that zone. You'll get certain times when you can drive through. Yeah. Look, Charlie, I heard about 4 years. In fact, I was on the phone 4 or 5 years on the phone to David Icke one morning. And I had an email from a guy who works at a local authority. We talked about this. I think David wrote something about this guy said he was working at a local authority. You see, I don't think he's working there anymore. So he was a little bit of a whistleblower. He was basically just sharing some gossip. This is about 4.5 to 5 years ago. And he said, guys, they've been talking, he said, at meetings that I've kind of been in about, Charlie, do you know these traffic control they're like metal posts. They sink into the ground, into the street, and then they raise back up again. You know, these ones are they're operated by remote control.
Yeah.
And he said, they're talking about putting these at the end of every street in the UK. So I said to the guy, why? Like, why? And at the time, Charlie, he said, it's in case there's a terrorist attack or something, that they can basically block off exits and entrances to the street just by clicking a button. These metal cylinders will rise out of the ground and block off the street. Now, this didn't really go anywhere because it hasn't happened. They haven't, you know, put these things at the entrance to certain streets. But it's come up again, this, because I had an email from a guy a couple of days ago, anonymous, no signature to it, no name, no nothing, but it was written very well. And he said, it's funny about that Oxford stuff, Richie. He said, I work in a local authority, wouldn't tell you when it was sent through Proton Mail. But he said, we're hearing things about barriers. That was the term he used, barriers, temporary barriers or barriers that could come out of the ground and be stomped back into the ground. Yeah. Now, look, none of this, I can't substantiate any of this. I can't verify any of it, but it just kind of makes sense. Like, if you want the population not to drive their cars because you're scaring them to death with horror stories about 1.5 degree global temperature increases, well, yeah, impose barriers and tell people that there are certain times they won't be allowed to drive. It's possible that it sounds like fear-mongering. And again, I cannot substantiate any of this. But why not? Like, you know,
this is how they think, though. This is, unfortunately, it only sounds crazy to people that haven't been paying attention. If you've been paying attention, it sounds diabolical. Reasonable. To be fair, but
diabolical, very reasonable.
But very reasonable. Like, this is increment. You know, as you know, I mean, you worked with David for many years. I simply wouldn't be doing what I'm doing without the work of David Icke that put me on this path. So I am eternally grateful to him. But in one of the concepts that he talked about years ago that makes perfect sense is the totalitarian tiptoe, that you can't go from A to Z all at once. You just make it very incremental and very small. You play that long game if you can. And when we saw during COVID was I felt like they condensed that. They started making mistakes. They were moving quickly. But from time to time, you catch them playing that long game. And with the climate, this whole climate change scam, this carbon tax, we know what it is. It's a disguise for a carbon tax. This has been a long burning 1972 Club of Rome concept. You know, we're going to use this whole thing. And
50 years, eh?
Yeah, 50 years. When you start talking about that, you know, in the 90s, you sound insane, you know, because there's so many more years to come. But here we are, right? Here we are. And we've got people promising you guys in Europe a dark winter. We have you guys being forced into accepting, acting against your own self-interest with regard to the energy crisis that's being made to happen because of sanctions being placed on Russia.
They've opened a coal mine here, and the green lobby has gone into meltdown. They've opened one coal mine. You know, it's the sensible thing to do. Of course, the sensible thing to do would be to reopen every coal mine closed by Thatcher and then closed by Tony Blair, with John Major and then Tony Blair, of course. But they're gone into meltdown over one coal mine. These people are idiots, Charlie. And sadly, they are sincere idiots. This is the thing that we have to grasp. They believe this. Like, especially the younger folks, they absolutely believe it. You've got Extinction Rebellion going on social media yesterday, threatening to physically stop this mine from becoming operational again.
Right.
I mean, that's terrorism. Like, if you and I over here, and Gareth Ike and, you know, a few young men, if we said we're going to go to the Ministry of Defense and we're going to stop them, you know, sending arms to Yemen, to Saudi Arabia to be used against people from Yemen, they'd call us domestic terrorists.
Yes.
They would call us terrorists. But you've got these guys openly saying we're going to stop this. And older people are already, now this is not fear-mongering, older citizens in this country are already dying in fuel poverty here. We know this. Even the mainstream is talking about this. Doctors on Sky News this morning saying they're losing patients because they're living in fear of turning on the gas, of turning on the natural gas radiators. Terrified, Charlie, because the bills have gone up to £400, £500 a month. They're dying of it. And at the same time, you've got billions of tons of coal under our feet that could be used. And of course, tens of thousands of well-paying good jobs could be created. I'm sure we can learn how to mine in a safer way than we did in the 50s and 60s and 70s. It's all there, but no. And it's been blamed on Vladimir Putin and his illegal war in Ukraine. And it's insane to me, Charlie, to be honest, what's happening here.
It really is insane. I remember the images that I had of the working class England. You know, it was like coal miners and going to the factory and all that stuff. And that was the same with America too. There's a section of America that's like the Rust Belt. You know, it's like, this is where we make cars and this is where we make steel and this is where we have the coal mines and this is where we work with our hands. And all of that stuff has been exported. I mean, in America, it happened in the 90s under NAFTA with Bush and Clinton, where they said, well, let's just get rid of all these jobs and send them overseas. And that lit a 30-year fuse on America, which just has apparently just gone off and destroyed the middle class. And I see similarities to what they're doing with you, too. They're forcing you guys out of this, out of real labor jobs. And
manufacturing jobs.
Don't you have a political party called Labour?
This is it. Look, Labour were complicit in this. Under Margaret Thatcher, they began to destroy trade unions. And it took about 30, 35 years to do it. It carried on under the premiership of Tony Blair. They began to make it next to impossible for workers to take significant industrial action. They banned sympathy strikes. They made them illegal, punishable by fines, and ultimately punishable by prison. For your viewers who don't know what a sympathy strike is, you're a postman, Charlie, and I work as a refuse collector for the local authority. And I see you as a postman that you're getting, excuse my language, fucked over by your bosses. And you don't deserve that. I can see that. And you go out on strike, but you know, it's difficult. You're a bunch of postal workers and you're on your own. And I say, well, deal with that. We're going out too. Mm-hmm. We're going out on strike. You know, I'm not a postman, but I'm going out on strike because he's getting screwed over. So they began to basically dismantle trade unionism by making it more and more difficult, you know, bringing down it used to be 30% of workers balloting to take industrial action. Then it was 40, then 50%. Unions couldn't be funded. It was a 30 to 35 year process. What you've got unions now in the UK no longer have the power, the bargaining power, or the take it to the streets. We're going to walk out. They don't have the power they had many years ago. That was, as I said, a 30-35 year process. And we see it now. Everybody's on strike here at the moment. You know that, don't you? Postal workers are on strike. Nurses are on strike. Ambulances are on strike. Doctors are on strike. It seems that they're coordinating the strikes in an attempt to affect the government, maybe to try and get some sort of a early general election called maybe early next year. Well, it's absolute chaos here, Charlie. But while all of that was going on, while they were destroying the unions, you hit the nail on the head, they were destroying manufacturing. And the same thing that happened in the US happened over here. Manufacturing jobs disappeared, which meant that generations of people who didn't go to college or who didn't go to university, there was nothing for them.
Right.
All of a sudden, you had no jobs. You had no manual labor jobs. They're all in China, as you said earlier on.
Yeah.
And that's led us to where we are now. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, what do you make of this this World Economic Forum Rishi the Rat that's come in here? What's his situation? He seems like a real pretentious dick to me, and not the type of guy I would want in charge of anything. So you guys recycled old Liz Truss pretty quick. What's the plan for Rishi? Is he staying around, or is he disposable?
He'll be disposable, I think, very quickly. I think the next general election isn't due for 2 years or just under 2 years. And they're supposed to stick to the five-year parliaments under something known as the Fixed Term Parliament Act. This came into law, I think, about 3 or 4 years ago to stop like constant general elections. However, as you pointed out, there have been three prime ministers in this country in the year 2022 alone. Liz Truss lasted about 4 weeks, put up a budget, which working people liked, she put up a kind of a low tax budget, but that's not the way things are going to be. So she was kicked out the door quicker than you can say, give me a ham sandwich. She was gone. And in comes Rishi Sunak, who worked for Goldman Sachs, whose wife is a billionaire. And but he's not for the long haul. The Labour Party, I believe, in my opinion, and Keir Starmer are for the long haul. They're going to take this great reset agenda. They're going to take it to the next level, I think, the Labour Party. And I expect a general election sometime in the early spring of next year. The Conservative Party will lose in a landslide, Charlie. That is inevitable. In fact, a number of high-profile Conservative Party MPs have already announced they're not going to stand at the next election because they know that the shellacking is going to be absolutely monumental. They know there's no chance.
They should hang in there. They should watch. They should watch America because the Democrats did the same thing. We're going to get demolished. We're going to get demolished. Then the elections happen, and they all start. They all won, and everyone's like,
"Yeah,
what is going on here?"
I hear you, but this hammering, this hiding, is inevitable. It's inevitable. It's been 12 years of a Conservative government. I think whoever pulls those strings has decided that it's got to be Labour now. The public wouldn't put up with it anyway. Another 5 years of Conservative Party government. So Labour is inevitable. And what have you got in Labour? Well, you've got a party full of woke warriors.
Great.
Green agenda, you know, climate change. We've got to fix the climate crisis. We've got to grow the economy with green jobs, which nobody ever presses them on. Well, what do you mean by green jobs exactly? You know, wind farms everywhere. Climate lockdowns, no doubt. I mean, think about the Labour Party, Charlie. The Labour Party is supposed to be His Majesty's opposition. That's something we could, but we won't get into it because we'd be here for hours talking about it. The opposition, it is supposed to provide legitimate opposition to the government's policies. What did the Labour Party do in March of 2020 and throughout 2020 and throughout 2021? It criticised the government for not locking down faster and harder. That's what the Labour Party did. Not doing it harder. Criticised the government for releasing the public from lockdowns. When did the first lockdown end? May or June of 2020 it ended. And then we were back in a lockdown in late 2020 again until early 2021. And each time that Boris Johnson came to the lectern and said, right, you know, we're going to start taking the brakes off the lockdown now and reopening, the Labour Party demanded that it didn't happen. If the Labour Party had its way, we'd still be in lockdown.
Right.
But they will form the next government. There's no doubt. You won't find a commentator in this country who will tell you that the Conservatives will be any part of government. It might even be a Labour, Liberal, Democrat coalition. And shit, Charlie, that'd be worse.
Yeah. Well, they think they're coming in and saving. Yeah. This has been my problem with the COVID, you know, the COVID Karens of the world that were saying, you got to wear your mask. And they would call the police if there are too many cars in the neighbor's driveway for Thanksgiving and whatever.
I'm here.
I say, take that mentality. The people that have over a virus with a 99.98% survivability rate, take that mentality and then extrapolate what they're going to do when they think they're saving the world from climate change. Yeah. Oh my God. Their brains will be broken. I mean, I think a case can be made that most of them already are. There's a look to them. And if you put them in power and you say, you guys are the ones that have to fix this for the people, boy, that might be worse, actually. Worse,
no doubt. Yeah. And, you know, if the IPCC, as I think will happen in 2023, if their language becomes even more alarmist, and I'm certain it will do, models might be produced to say, it's worse than we thought, guys. You know, we thought 2035, we thought 2050, it's worse than we thought. 2030, it's 2030 now. They've already said here that they won't produce any more diesel cars after 2030. They just won't make them. And God knows what will happen then if they'll make it difficult for somebody who's got a diesel car, you know, to get diesel. They might say, well, you can't get diesel now. And But yeah, I think what might happen is the language might become more alarmist through 2023, 2024. And yeah, I think that's when things like rationing your travel, your flying, your driving, you might get an allowance then. Maybe not the driving. I don't think in 2023, 2024, I don't think they'll try and ration driving then. That might come 2026, 2027. But certainly the flying will be rationed, I think. And that's just, even to think about that, it's terrifying. That a government can say, well, we're going to limit you to one trip overseas this year. Charlie, you might have an elderly mum in Los Angeles. You live in the States, one of the biggest areas of land in the world. You might have a mum living in New Mexico, in Chicago, anywhere. And they say, well, tough, like, you know, you only get to travel once, Charlie. That's your allowance this year.
And we don't have a rail system like you guys do either.
No, because it's massive, because your country's massive.
Yeah,
it's just massive, yeah.
We're in a real predicament here. Yeah. So I can. So for those that don't know, you know, they think, oh, you guys, you sound insane. You're talking about this stuff. Well, look, let's just pivot to this. Let's talk about what's going on to the Dutch farmers, and then tell us that we're crazy.
And New Zealand.
Oh, New Zealand, is it happening there?
It's harder. Yeah.
Oh yeah. God. Yeah.
Taxing cow farts. Taxing farmers because their cows fart, because the cow breaks wind. I mean, this is insane. And do you know when they started talking about this 5 years ago? I laughed out loud. I thought it was an April Fool's gag. Destroying farmers, destroying their livelihoods, taxing them because their animals pass methane. But Charlie, people don't understand this. People can't see how this transfers from the cow to the human being.
Yeah.
Because last time I looked, we passed methane too.
Yeah.
And CO2. Yeah. They're lunatics.
Yeah. So, I've got concerns, and then we start to see these maps showing a futuristic mega city coming out of the Netherlands. What is that all about? Because that looks like, I mean, if I didn't know any better, I would call it like the home of the New World Order. I mean, it looks like they're built.
David wrote about this, didn't he? David said eventually they want to get people away from the coast. They've already begun to decommission coastal towns in the UK. And for your viewers who don't understand what that means, they've told people who own their homes, who've worked all their lives, who live in villages, in Wales in particular, they've said the sea is going to come in and your village is going to be underwater by 2050. Therefore, we're going to start the process of decommissioning the town. When they start talking about that, it immediately renders everybody's house worthless.
Yeah.
Worthless. Any equity in the house, gone. We can't. And by decommissioning, it means that over a period of time, they basically just stop investing in the town. They stop building in it. They stop maintaining, from an engineering point of view, the waterworks and, the gas works and all of that. No, we've got to do that because we believe in 2050, it's going to be underwater. No proof, Charlie. None. There's no proof, but that doesn't matter because lunacy reigns. That's what David spoke about years ago. First time I went to see him speak was on the Isle of Wight years ago. And he said, smart super cities built in the existing city, so Birmingham, London, Manchester, Salford, where I am, of course, Chicago, New York City, Boston, and get everybody out of the countryside, get them out of rural areas, get them out of the coastal zones, blame most of this on climate, and build super cities. They're building them already in the Middle East, aren't they? We see some of these crazy structures and people will live in tiny apartments. And it's mad to even think about it. But that process has already begun, yeah. Yeah. And we're the only people in the world talking about this right now, you and me.
Yeah,
because God knows they're not talking about it on the BBC or anywhere else.
You get these. We here in America are watching what little, obviously not mainstream news, but you get it in little bits and pieces here, showing protests, showing the farmers standing up for one another. Obviously, we saw the yellow vests in France that went on. COVID conveniently knocked that sort of out of the way. But the Dutch home. The Dutch farmers, you know, the 3,000 farms being confiscated or purchased, I guess, for below market value by the state. You know, people, I think if people could, you know, we watch this and go, wow, that's crazy. That look at how that's insane. I just hope people also take the additional step in, of thinking, you do realize this is planned to come to us too. Wherever you are, wherever you're watching this, this is the plan. It's just happening there first, and we're watching it like we're watching a car accident or something. But that is the plan for us, is it not?
That's the plan, yeah. Yeah. And the totalitarian tiptoe means that it's not impossible, but it's next to impossible to alert enough people to it. Because as you said earlier on, it's, well, I'd be seeing that on the BBC if that was true.
Yeah.
Or I would have read about it in the Times. It's very difficult. When it's so incremental, it's difficult to draw people's attention to it because you can see what the next step is going to be. So you're saying, well, look what they're doing now in Oxford. You see, this is meant to be rolled out all over the country. They don't believe you, Charlie.
Yeah.
They're like, oh, no, that's just London. It's because of the high volume of traffic. No, no, it's not about the high volume of traffic. It's about controlling where you can go, when you can go there, and who you can go with. That's what it's about. But they don't see it because it's so incremental. And then it's like that where you, there's an analogy. I can't remember the analogy. But at the very end of it, they hear the trapdoor slam shut behind them.
Yeah.
And they've walked into it.
Yeah.
They've walked into it with eyes wide open. Yeah. They've walked into the room. Bang, the door goes. What happened? Well, you're in prison, son. And at each step of the way, somebody said to you, this is not good, this. And you said, nah, it's all right because the BBC would look after me. My politicians in England, this is a free country. This is a liberal democracy. This couldn't possibly happen here. Yeah, but they told you to stay home, not go to work, commit financial suicide. They told you to wreck the mental health of your children based on some virus that you might or might not catch. And they forced you to do it under penalty of fining you or putting you in jail. But you're telling me it's a liberal democracy.
Right.
It's like talking sometimes to two-year-olds, Charlie.
Yes.
These are intelligent men and women, your neighbors, your friends. It's a waste of time. You know, an MP stood up in the House of Commons on Wednesday during Prime Minister's questions, Andrew Bridgen. He's a Conservative Party MP. I don't think he plans to stand at the next election. And he said to the Prime Minister on live television, Charlie, a lot of people saw this in the UK because a lot of people watch Prime Minister's questions. It's a Punch and Judy show. It's ridiculous. It's a lot of jeering and screaming. It's rubbish, really. So Andrew Bridgen stands up and he says, Prime Minister, the mRNA jabs have reportedly caused more deaths and injury in 18 months than conventional jabs have caused in 50 years.
I saw it.
Amazing, right? So he went on then to say, why won't you put a halt to the rollout? As he was saying this, a dizzy bint, that's a great English word, bint. It's a kind of a misogynistic word to describe a woman, a dizzy bint, just a stupid woman, basically. Mm-hmm. Sitting behind him said, tinfoil hat. This is another member of Parliament. Sunak, the Prime Minister, in response said, I believe the jabs are safe and effective. It doesn't matter if the media doesn't jump all over Bridgen and try to determine if the jabs are doing that much damage. What matters to me is that Mr. and Mrs. Joe Smith would watch that, listen to Andrew Bridgen say the jabs are killing people and injuring people, and they would just carry on as normal and go for their third jab. That's how bad things have become. You don't even need the news media to pick it up. Like, you should be intelligent enough to watch the TV, and a guy says, an elected MP, by the way, he says, the jabs have done more damage in 18 months, these new jabs, he called them experimental, than any other jab has done in 50 years. But Mr. and Mrs. John Smith are so programmed, he's not going, did you hear that, Helen? Maybe we shouldn't have the winter booster jab. No, he's running down the fucking road to have jab number 4.
Yes. It's amazing. You know, I tell you, I see this and I, as a writer, I feel like it's the endless content. I can't. It's a psychological thriller. You know, I watch this. It's a case study in media manipulation, psychological programming, torture, you know, propaganda. It's a case study in all of these things, and I'm fascinated by it. I just wish it wasn't happening because it has real world implications. A lot of people are getting physically hurt, mentally hurt, like you said, financially destroyed. They're being convinced to act against their own self-interest in a way that makes, they're trading in that for virtue points. And then shaming other people, doing the job of the state shame other people. I think what a disgusting existence you have to first not even question what the state tells you. Take that inside your own brain, internalize it, and then have the audacity to lecture people like us and call us tinfoil hat.
Yeah, or dangerous even.
Can I tell you?
Crazy. Can I tell you the funniest thing I heard in the last 2 years?
Please do. I got it
from the BBC, and it's a bit of audio. I use it quite regularly on the show. Next time you're on, I'll play it for you. I wish I could play it here, but I can't. But next time you're on my show, I'll play the audio. It's just wonderful. So about a year and a half, BBC, it's got lots of radio stations, the BBC. It's got six national stations. So on BBC Radio 5 Live, which is very popular, they do a breakfast show, and it's lots of people phoning in and stuff on the BBC. Obviously, they're very heavily screened. So about a year and a half ago or 18 months ago, they decided to pose the question, should the unjabbed be denied medical treatment if they need it? And this was started because that rat arse, that useless Piers Morgan, he was on another channel, on ITV, and he was posing this. He was very aggressively saying, if the unjabbed refuse to be jabbed, well, when they get sick, they shouldn't be allowed into hospitals. Anyway, so there was a phone in about this, and a guy rang in called Matthew. Now, please believe me, I'm not exaggerating. This is what he said verbatim. I had my first jab. I was very ill. I had to go to hospital for a day. I had my second jab. I got quite ill. I had to go to hospital for a second day. Why should somebody who's unjabbed who gets sick, why should they take up a hospital bed that might be used by me if I have a vaccine injury? I swear to God. He said, why should the unjabbed be allowed go to hospital for whatever reason? Hospital beds should be preserved for people like me, courageous enough to have the jab, for when we have vaccine injuries. That is true. I nearly crashed my car, Charlie. I couldn't wait to get home to record the clip. How do you deal with an intellect like that?
You really, those are dangerous people because they're in your way and they don't, it's the herd, you know, this herd mentality. We've talked about this again, back to the psychology of this whole thing. Yeah. This herd of when we're talking about a herd of animals, you know, they travel in a herd for protection and for a variety of reasons. When you stray away from the herd, there's usually somebody whose job is to get you back in. But if you get too far away, you know, the herd thinks you're going to attract predators to you because you're by yourself, and then that might lead them back to us. So they shun you then to keep you away to out of protection. And we watch animals do this, and I go, well, I'm watching humans do this too. I'm watching people that aren't taking the time to think, and it's always they always want to have the largest opinion about it too. The ones that haven't done
the loudest ones, absolutely.
So I've got to myself to a point where, you know, there's an adage that there's the thing they tell you when you work as a lifeguard or something. Is be very careful with people that are drowning. It's your job to save them, but be very careful trying to help somebody that's drowning because they're more than likely they'll pull you down with them, you know? So I'm walking this fine line between trying to be the lifeguard to the extent I can and help people when they're in distress. But at the same time, if you are insisting on going out into the water while you're wearing a full pair of jeans and a sweatshirt and you've been drinking all day, I'm sorry. I'm not going to try and help you because you're clearly not even trying to help yourself. You're putting yourself in a dangerous
situation. That's a great analogy. I'm going to steal that. That's a great analogy.
Please do.
It's a terrific analogy. How can you help people like that? Do you remember during the first lockdowns, one of the Australia, as you know, is divided up into states. They don't have governors, they have premiers. Mm-hmm. So one of the premiers of one of the Australian states, it was a woman. She went on TV and told people not to stop and talk to each other in the supermarket. You know, and again, I'm thinking, surely they're screaming at their TVs, but they're not. They're taking notice of it. They're saying, all right, Jimmy, better not stop and talk outdoors. You know, you meet Bridget. You haven't seen her for a couple of weeks. Like, you want to say, how are you getting on, Bridget? How are things? No, no. It's tempting, she said this. I've got all these clips. I've got a bank of them, thousands of them. And I play them on the radio show all the time. It's tempting, but don't keep moving forward. Keep walking forward. Don't stop and talk to the neighbor. Speaking to your constituents like this, in this manner. And she's not the worst. They're the worst for going along with it. For saying, yeah, okay, yeah.
I know who you're talking about. She's a homely, she's a manly looking lady. And then there's the other one, Dan Andrews. Yeah, that guy. And they're all coked up. They all look coked up.
They do look strange, don't they? A lot of these people. They're always at their nose too.
Yeah, yeah. Whether it's Zelensky or Jacinda Ardern or Dan Andrews or a variety of these people, they all seem a little bit coked up. Well, listen, if I was working for the New World Order, I would probably have to self-medicate myself as well, I guess. I don't know.
That's a good point, Charlie. What have they done? We'll never know what they've done. I mean, what I mean by that is, what did they do that compromises them? I mean, for some of them, it will definitely be underage. It'll be children.
For sure.
No doubt. For some of the others, it'll be some financial malfeasance that they were kind of enticed into so that they could be snared. I'm curious as a journalist, I'm sure you are, to know, like, what is it, you know? Of course, we can't speculate because that's unfair. We don't want to be calling people pedophiles, but definitely children. I think you and I both believe Epstein was one of those guys, wasn't he? He was one of those guys that was keeping them honest.
Yeah.
Come and have a plane ride with me. And I've got plenty of young girls here to meet while we do that.
Yeah.
Those logs, Charlie. Like, I still go and look at those logs to see the names of some of the people who took regular flights with him. And the media, deaf, dumb, and blind, doesn't want to know.
Yeah.
Bill Clinton. How many times, Bill? 25 times.
I've talked about Whitney Webb's got a couple books that she put out recently that get into this, and she's talking about the Clinton White House years and the first time around, and how Epstein went with Mark Middleton 17 different occasions to the White House, and then the way they were laundering money there, or the way they were sort of pulling money into the Clintons, was a really kind of fascinating, a fascinating cover story that they've used on multiple occasions. But it was renovating the White House. They were renovating the Oval Office. They were going to spend money to refurbish things, right? And so Hillary was out there raising money, and Epstein was out there, you know, finding money for them, and, you know, you don't have a budget to renovate the house. I mean, it seemed preposterous to me. But
2020 level-headed person, just ridiculous and preposterous, and yet they were doing it in open view, knowing that the media wouldn't touch them because the media is controlled by compromised individuals that were compromised by people like Epstein. I'd love to know who the other Epsteins are in the world now, because there's plenty of them, you know, guys doing that, trapping people. I remember when we first heard about Epstein, I got a flashback to Godfather 2, when Senator Geary tells Michael at Lake Tahoe, yeah, I'll give you what you want, but you're going to pay me because I don't like you Corleones and I don't like your kind and all of that. And it's brilliant. And in that scenario, Michael is the deep state, really, but the senator doesn't know it. So they get the senator, they get him into bed, they drug him and they get him into bed with a murdered prostitute. And then he's theirs for life because Tom Hagen shows up and says, don't worry about it, Senator. You've been found in bed with a dead prostitute, but don't worry about it. We'll look after you. And when I heard the Epstein stuff for the first time several years ago, I thought, wow, yeah, sure, look, it makes perfect sense. So there are multiple Epsteins out there, and they're grooming the future leaders of tomorrow. The next 10 years' time, prime ministers, they're out there now getting them, entrapping them, getting video footage of them. It's an amazing thing when you think of it. So we don't know who's going to be prime minister in 10 years' time. They do, and they've got them now going to all manner of parties and all sorts of stuff. It's wonderfully simple when you think about it, Charlie.
Yeah, it's that World Economic Forum Young Global Leader Program. You run them.
Let's just look who's doing it now.
Yeah, exactly. You run them through and then you give them a franchise like Epstein. Epstein had that East Coast Caribbean franchise. Yeah. But you know, there's a guy, you know, you had Lawrence E. King running that Lincoln, Nebraska program right in central, in the center part of America. You had Hugh Hefner running it on in the Playboy Mansion on the West Coast, had big ties there. But now, of course, we're in a digital age where you don't even need to put the guy in the bed with the dead prostitute. You can digitally make it look like there's the dead prostitute or the 8-year-old boy or whatever. You know, now we're at a point
where... How scary is that, by the way? How scary is that whole deepfake thing? Like, because it's probably not as good yet as it will be in 3 or 4 years' time, when it'll be just almost impossible to say that it is a digitally altered image or a fake image. Jesus, yeah, you're right. The possibilities of blackmail are limitless then, aren't they? Limitless.
Yeah. And I wonder, though, if because we're moving into this new digital age, if guys like Epstein become sort of expendable. Because what do you need him for? If he's running this operation, if he gets caught, you can do it a different way. I'll tell you, I was getting into some weird territory where I was looking at the FTX scandal, the crypto scandal,
and the
Sam Bankman-Fried, and he obviously gives me the creeps, and that whole family stinks of intelligence. But his brother was the one that was really bothering me, because his brother Gabe Bankman-Fried had a political action committee, a PAC, where you can deploy funds to different things. And he was spending the money that he was being given by his brother, who was, of course, stealing it. He was spending it on genetics programs and genome projects and things like that. And I go, wait a second, that's what Epstein was doing. That's what he was getting these scientists. They were all working with Wellcome Trust over there in where you are in the UK. And they were deeply involved with Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation. And I'm going, wait a second. When you start talking about genetics, I think you're really talking about eugenics.
Of course you are. 100%. Well, you are much closer to me to what's going on in Canada. I mean, it's absolutely horrendous. And next year, the UK government will publish a bill on legalizing assisted dying in this country as well. So that's everywhere. And it's only a year ago that we learned about the suicide pod. You might remember that.
Yes.
The 3D printable suicide pod that you can sit in, press a button, and nitrogen will fill the chamber and you'll have a blissful death in a matter of seconds.
It's insane. They're normalizing suicide. And I just did an episode on this. I want to read you something. This was talking about medical assistance in dying in Canada, because I think this will probably become, like you said, it's set to be exported to you guys at some point. June 2016, it becomes legal. And then in March 2021, they introduced a bill. They amended it by Bill C-7, which added a two-sentence component to it. It might have added more, but it added this two sentences that makes a huge difference. It says, the law no longer requires a person's natural death to be reasonably foreseeable to access medical assistance in dying. Meaning, you don't even need to be sick anymore.
You don't need to be sick.
You need to want it. Yeah.
You just want to give up on life, basically, and you'll be able to do that. You know, 10,000 people were euthanized in Canada last year. When I heard that statistic, I was dumbstruck. I could not believe that. And you would have seen that horrible episode where that lovely lady who's a paraplegic, she's an army veteran, and she'd won some medals in the Paralympics. All she wanted was a stairlift. And God love her, like, she was persistent. And why wouldn't you be persistent? They were ignoring her. So keep going after them. Give me a stairlift, please. Help me out here. And they offer her suicide.
Yeah.
That guy should never work again anywhere. I'm not somebody who believes in punishing somebody for eternity. I don't believe in firing people. You know, I'm a bloody trade unionist. I have been all my life. But that guy shouldn't be anywhere near people ever again.
No.
You suggested to a woman that she go and kill herself. And you actually said, look, you can do it. We've got the medical assistance in dying. Yeah, that's warped stuff, that. And you hit the nail on the head. They will dilute and dilute and dilute and just make it easier and easier and easier for anybody who decides they've had enough, right?
Yeah.
You know, and you know what I said on my show the other day? And I say this stuff for a laugh to get a few giggles. But sometimes you say something for a laugh, it gets a couple of giggles, and then somebody says, Jesus, Richie, maybe. What about young people, Charlie, who are convinced that we're all dead because of climate change?
Yeah.
What about one or two of these Extinction Rebellion? If they become so psychologically damaged, is it impossible that some of these kids might say, do you know what? I'll take one for the planet.
It is.
Put me into a suicide pod.
It is unfortunately completely reasonable.
Yeah.
If you extrapolate out where people's mental health situation is going, this climate guilt that's being put on people. Now, in this same episode I did, I talked about the company called Simon, a home decor and clothing company that made a short film about medical assistance and dying with a lady who was on her way towards that. She was had made the arrangements, she was going, and they interviewed her, and then they used it as a commercial for their show, you know. And I said, God, you know, it's got that Abercrombie and Fitch, you know, selling lifestyle feel to it. And then it hit me, they're selling death style. They'll do it the same way. They'll make it cool. They'll say, you know, this person, they'll make it seem amazing and stunning and brave, and I'm taking control of my life, and look at the response, and then the media will amplify that, and then kids will see that, and they'll go, well, if I'm going to go out, I want to go out in a way where I'll have the big, you know, the big funeral, and everyone Absolutely. Will talk about how stunning and brave I, and I can see that happen. I don't want it to happen. I hope it never happens, but I can see, based on where we're going, a scenario in which they normalize this to the point where they glamorize it.
Imagine I'll see that and I'll raise it. I think that's brilliant. It isn't brilliant, but I think your analysis is brilliant. Imagine they told a generation of youngsters, actually, we've figured out how to preserve your consciousness.
Oh, God.
We've figured out how to preserve your consciousness. You can live in the meta. It'll be bliss. Do whatever you want. But your physical body will expire. And that'll be brilliant for the planet. And you get to live. Your consciousness gets to, it's preserved, and forever you can live in the metaverse doing whatever it is you want.
Whoa.
Why not?
I mean, it's the first time you hear something like that.
I know.
Or you hear something like climate lockdowns or COVID lockdowns. The first time always sounds crazy.
Yeah.
The 12th time, well, you know, you start to think, well, I know what happens when the media gets a hold of one of these crazy ideas and starts talking about it constantly. You know, it's like, next thing you know.
Did Musk say that? Did Musk say several years ago that they're looking at, maybe it wasn't Musk, but I know the transhumanists, it's their holy grail, their way to be able to capture the consciousness after the physical body has died and then, you know, place that conscious being, which is now not a physical being anymore, somewhere else. So, yeah, they've probably been talking about this for years, this idea of how do we do that? And then I'm sure somebody else at some stage said, well, in a world of, in a world where there is an awful lot of scarcity, and in a world that's lurching towards a climate catastrophe, a climate crisis, yeah, wouldn't it be brilliant if we could just exit the carbon creating physical bodies and exist somewhere else? And if you convince enough youngsters who really do believe that they have no future, that you can now do this and transport them somewhere else, I'm sure some of them would say, yeah, why not? Yeah, let's go for it.
They're going to be a genie in a bottle. You know what I mean?
And it'll save the world.
Rub the lamp. You get three wishes. I mean, this is good. Let's wrap up with this, because since we're talking about total insanity, let's wrap up with Meghan and Harry. What the fuck is
going on? Poor little Meghan and Harry. God love them. They've only got a $14 million house in Los Angeles. They've only got Netflix paying them God knows how much. Here's my very quick take on it before you kick me off. Let's not forget that these are human beings. There isn't any racism. I don't see any racist behavior towards them. Meghan Markle, who is mixed race. I have a feeling Meghan is a diva. She's an actress and a diva. They're all divas. One of our great friends, Jean Anne Crowley, very successful actress, loved the woman. Jean Anne's a diva, she'd tell you that. Meghan got to London, married this guy, and then realized, shit, I've got a life of going to baking sales. I've got a life judging cookery competitions. And I've got, I don't want to do this. This is shit. I don't want to do this. And she's gone to Harry. Get me out of here, quick, lad. And they've invented, I mean, that sounds preposterous, my take on it. But I think she realized that this is a horrible life.
Yeah.
It's very wealthy and very comfortable, but it's horrible. I mean, that's all they do. I mean, listen, I hate the bastards. I'm an Irish guy. I hate these people. I don't hate anybody. I despise the institution. I tell you what, Charlie, it's no picnic.
No.
I mean, they're on the road 365 days of the year, shaking hands with idiots.
Yes.
Tasting shit pies. And then they have no privacy. Megan said to Harry, fuck this, Harry. I'm not having any of this. Get me back to LA at the speed of light. She's particularly attractive. I think she is anyway. She was in Suits. I thought she was particularly attractive. Harry is obviously head over heels in love with her.
Yeah.
And he's gone, right, yeah, all right, let's go there. So we've got to have a cover story. Yes, I know. The royal family are a bunch of racists. I'll tell you what, Charlie. I don't know if they are or if they're not. They're a lot worse than that.
Oh, yeah. There are these people saying, well, she's saying that the royal family is racist and that's disrespectful to the royal family. I'm like, have a seat. I'd like to explain to you. Give you a taste of what the royal family has been up to for the last couple. If you think that's offensive, wait till you see. Have you met Prince Philip, the actual Nazi? You know,
absolutely.
Or Jimmy Savile. Yeah, I'm like, for God's sake, Jimmy Savile. But I'm my favorite part of the Harry in Meghan component is watching Piers Morgan melt down on Twitter. Oh, about
fantastic. Yeah.
And watching Rich Willett prod, you know, poke at him.
Rich is just
egging him on, you know, just in his face. And I thought you guys had Piers Morgan and then you sent him over here and then we sent him back to you.
Send him back over, yeah.
You're not going to say, you promise us in America, you're not going to send him back over here.
He's a failure. You won't have him. The one thing I've always said, we've all been critical of the United States and its foreign policy and its neoconservatives and all that. Listen, nobody does TV better than the United States. Nobody does it better. He failed when he took over from Larry King because he didn't understand that. And he doesn't have any personality. And he's very thin-skinned.
Yeah.
And American television viewers, I know you laugh at this. You know, American television viewers, they've been spoiled. So they're smart. They know a good one versus a bad one. And they're used to thick-skinned presenters over there who can poke fun at themselves and who can shut up and listen when they've asked a question. So he didn't succeed, so he came back over here. Do you know what that bastard did during the lockdowns? He worked for ITV's Good Morning Britain and he harangued conservative politicians for not locking down faster and harder. That's all he did. And that bastard called himself a journalist. When it's your job to challenge the government and to pull apart the narrative and to see, are there any holes? No. He applauded the lockdowns and the tyranny. He just wanted more of it, Charlie. Bastard.
He's a scumbag. Yeah.
The capitalist.
But you know what? He's perfect. He's in the media. He's you know, lying. He's a lying liar. He's where he belongs in front of a microphone on your television. But God, I feel sorry for you guys because you guys have to pay for television licensing, right? It means you have to pay to watch that bastard.
Some of us don't. Some of us don't.
Yeah.
I've never had the license. I've never paid for it. It's £150 a year, and it goes to the BBC, nearly pretty much every penny of it. I'm no grandstander, but I'm not going to pay £150 to have lies fucking told to me morning, noon, and night.
No.
You know, I can get it for free, you know. I can read, but that's right, the TV license, yeah. But that's something I think, as time has gone on, fewer and fewer people are paying that and are basically sticking two fingers up to the government and the BBC. No, we've never had one. I'm not worried about saying that. They are entitled to come and knock at your door, but you are entitled to not answer them. Do you have a television set? None of your business. Please get off of my doorstep. Thank you. they generally just go away. But they've never come around our house. We've never seen them. We get these letters all the time, and white sheets of paper, big block red. And the inspectors are in your area next week. So expect a call. Yeah.
Sorry, I'm out of town. I have to talk to you later. I'm finishing my 15-minute drive through Oxford. So I'll have to be back. That is the great Richie Allen, everybody.
Thank you, Charlie. It's funny I can drive. I'm just going to pick up my car. Go on.
Where's the best place for people to find you to listen to?
Just go to my website. Thanks, Charlie. Just go to richieallen.co.uk. That's R-I-C-H-I-E for Richie. And then Allen is obviously A-L-L-E-N. Go to richieallen.co.uk, Monday to Thursday, 5 o'clock UK time, and Sundays at 10. And if you do go and listen for the first time, you will hear people like Charlie Robinson, people who write interesting books and have got interesting shows. So that's what I do. And it's live, so it's always fun when it's live, yeah.
It's a great show. I meant every word of that. And I have to shout out to my friends that I grew up with, Matt and Quinn, back in Los Angeles, who listened to your show and sent me an email. Were you just on the Richie Allen show?
Oh, they were listening. Are they brilliant?
Oh, they've listened many times, and they love you. So you are most definitely international, and I can tell because I have friends in Los Angeles that listen to you religiously. So
it's nice to hear that, Charlie. You're very kind, mate.
If you're looking for following a journalist that's doing actual journalism, not just fucking around on the edges like everyone else, I highly recommend Richie Allen. Support his work. If you want to check out my work, you can find the website, theoctopusofglobalcontrol.com. You can follow me on Twitter, @macroaggressions. We will talk to you all soon.